Chapter 39. For almost a week, a string of turbulent summer fronts kept the ceilings low and the winds too dangerous for small planes. When the extended forecasts showed nothing but calm, dry air for everywhere but South Texas, Ray left Charlottesville in a Cessna and began the longest cross-country of his brief flying career. Avoiding busy airspace and looking for easy landmarks below, he flew west across the Shenandoah Valley into West Virginia and into Kentucky, where he picked up fuel at a 4,000-foot strip not far from Lexington. The Cessna could stay aloft for about 3.5 hours before the indicator dipped below a quarter of a tank. He landed again in Terre Haute, crossed the Mississippi River at Hannibal, and stopped for the evening in Kirksville, Missouri, where he checked into a motel. It was his first motel since the Odyssey with the cash, and it was precisely because of the cash that he was back in a motel. He was also in Missouri, and as he flipped through muted channels in his room, he remembered Patton French's story of stumbling upon Ryaks at a tort seminar in St. Louis. An old lawyer from a small town in the Ozarks had a son who taught at the university in Columbia, and the son knew the drug was bad. And because of Patton French and his insatiable greed and corruption, he, Ray Attlee, was now in another motel in a town where he knew absolutely no one. A front was developing over Utah. Ray lifted off just after sunrise and climbed to above 5,000 feet. He trimmed his controls and opened a large cup of steaming black coffee. He flew more north than west for the first leg and was soon over the cornfields of Iowa. Alone, a mile above the earth, in the cool, quiet air of the early morning, and with not a single pilot chattering on the airwaves, Ray tried to focus on the task before him. It was easier, though, to loaf, to enjoy the solitude and the views and the coffee and the solitary act of leaving the world down there. And it was quite pleasant to put off thoughts of his brother. After a stop in Sioux Falls, he turned west again and followed Interstate 90 across the entire state of South Dakota before skirting the restricted space around Mount Rushmore. He landed in Rapid City, rented a car, and took a long drive through Badlands National Park. Morningstar Ranch was somewhere in the hills south of Kalispell, though its website was purposefully vague. Oscar Meave had tried, but had been unsuccessful in pinpointing its exact location. At the end of the third day of his journey, Ray landed after dark in Kalispell. He rented a car, found dinner, then a motel, and spent hours with aerial and road maps. It took another day of low-altitude flying around Kalispell and the towns of Woods Bay, Polson, Big Fork, and Elmo. He crossed Flathead Lake a half dozen times and was ready to surrender the air war and send in the ground troops when he caught a glimpse of a compound of some sort near the town of Summers on the north side of the lake. From 1,500 feet, he circled the place until he saw a substantial fence of green chain link almost hidden in the woods and practically invisible from the air. There were small buildings that appeared to be housing units, a larger one for administration perhaps, a pool, tennis courts, a barn with horses grazing nearby. He circled long enough for a few folks within the complex to stop whatever they were doing and look up with shielded eyes. Finding it on the ground was as challenging as from the air, but by noon the next day, Ray was parked outside the unmarked gate, glaring at an armed guard who was glaring back at him. After a few tense questions, the guard finally admitted that yes, he had in fact found the place he was looking for.
"We don't allow visitors," he said smugly.
Ray created a tale of a family in crisis and stressed the urgency of finding his brother. The procedure, as the guard grudgingly laid out, was to leave a name and a phone number, and there was a slight chance someone from within would contact him. The next day he was trout fishing on the Flathead River when his cell phone rang. An unfriendly voice belonging to an Allison with Morningstar asked for Ray Attlee. Who was she expecting? He confessed to being Ray Attlee, and she proceeded to ask what was it he wanted from their facility. I have a brother there, he said as politely as possible. His name is Forrest Attlee, and I'd like to see him. What makes you think he's here? She demanded. He's there. You know he's there, I know he's there. So can we please stop the games? I'll look into it, but don't expect a return call. She hung up before he could say anything. The next unfriendly voice belonged to Darryl, an administrator of something or other. It came late in the afternoon while Ray was hiking a trail in the Swan Range near the Hungry Horse Reservoir. Darryl was as abrupt as Allison. 30 minutes, he informed Ray. At 10 in the morning.